Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. Today, I welcome to your Partner in Success Radio author and speaker Bob Berg. Many of you probably already recognize the name. Bob is the author of four books, the international bestseller The Go-Giver, Go-Giver Sell More, Endless Referrals, and It's Not About You. And today we're going to be talking about his recent book, It's Not About You. And Bob will share with us some insights from the book that will help you be a better business person, a better salesperson, and more importantly, just a better real person. So, Bob, thank you so much for coming on the show with me today. I really appreciate it.
Well, Denise, I'm so in love with you. You probably never heard someone sing that to you, have you?
Not in about a week. So you're right on time.
How are you?
You know, I'm good. There are several Denise songs out there, and I think they're all about me.
Well,
maybe it is about you.
Actually, the title of the book, It's Not About You, we were actually trying to get the publisher to change that, to put an asterisk at the end of it, and the asterisk was going to say, unless you are Denise, and then it is about you.
See, the show's over. I'm done. We're good. Well, thank you so, so much. I would love for you to tell our audience a little bit about yourself for those few that don't know who you are already. Just give, you know, a little bit of information about who you are, where they can find you, and then I have a ton of questions for you.
Well, that's sweet. I'm sure there's more than just a few who don't know me, though, but that's sweet of you to say. Really, I've just been speaking now for over 20 years on topics sort of relating to business building, business networking, developing, creating relationships that result in referral business, especially for people who they're good at what they do. They love what they do. They realize they add great value with what they do, but they don't enjoy the sales and marketing process necessarily. So a lot of what I've written in the past, starting with my book Endless Referrals, which has been out for a while now, that's where I mention our great friend Terry Murphy. Actually, you mentioned Terry in a couple different books. But
you do?
Yeah. But
I love Terry.
She's the best.
She's a go-giver.
Oh, she embodies. She should have written the book. I mean, she's amazing. It's everything she does and everything she is, and she's become very successful because of it. Mm-hmm. And so, really, that's all I do. And I began as a broadcasting field, moved into sales, and I've enjoyed the whole process of speaking to others about sales as well.
Well, these days there are more and more people working from home. I'm sure you're probably aware of that. A lot of us are taking our entrepreneurial spirit and just kicking into high gear. And then a lot of people are losing their jobs or leaving their jobs for whatever reason. And they're looking to do something on their own. Your books, I think, are very, very helpful to people like that who just say, I know what I'm doing. I think I can sell this. I'm pretty sure that my message is good, my product is good. I might just need a little bit of assistance. So I think that's where you come in, don't you?
Yeah. You know, and by the way, I've moved my business into my home now, too. So I had an outside office for, gosh, I think about 15 years. And the last few years now, it's all, you know, in-home. I always say it's Berg Worldwide International Headquarters, also known as my spare bedroom.
I have a dedicated office, but I know what you're talking about. My house has never had a room that wasn't dedicated to an office. But, you know, my office is closely connected to my kitchen. So I can get from my kitchen make a gumbo, run in, build a website, go back to my gumbo. It's fun.
Wow.
I have a good time working from home. So, but I know more and more people on a more serious note are doing that.
Mm-hmm,
and a
absolutely.
Lot of people just say, you know, I know what I'm doing. I was good in the corporate world. But how do I translate what I absolutely know into working for myself? And it's scary for a lot of people.
Oh, it is. And, you know, fortunately, there are some really good books out there that really help you do that. Pam Slim's book, Cubicle Nation, was a great book that I think gave a lot of people confidence to be able to move from that cubicle or, you know, any type of corporate environment to then going out there and doing their same thing, their own thing. People like Carol Roth, who wrote The Entrepreneur Equation, she was able to really kind of to put in words, you know, first of all, helping people understand whether they are cut out to be an entrepreneur or not, or just to be a, you know, a full-time hobbyist, because sometimes people go into business thinking that's what it is when really it's not. Really, it's just a glorified hobby. You've got people like Carrie Wilkerson, who wrote the book Barefoot Executive, who shows how to really set up an office in your home and, you know, be able to run it and make it very profitable. So fortunately, there are a lot of people out there, Denise, who, you know, I think have seen that this is a market that really, really needed some help. And, you know, fortunately, they've come through with some really good materials out there.
All you have to do is look around. I mean, the information is out there, and people are willing to help. One thing about entrepreneurs, and I am guessing that you have noticed this over time, we are some of the most generous people in the world with our time, with advice, with tips, you know, with actionable material. I mean, we're very, very generous people.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to succeed because we did.
Sure.
And we don't want, to me, in my world, there is no competition. You know, I'm a web developer. I'm a virtual assistant. I have two small companies. I don't have any competition. Everything I do very well. So I don't mind telling everybody how to do what I do. Go for it. I can't
Wallace,
have all the clients in the world.
No, you're absolutely correct. Wallace Wattles in his 1910
love
classic.
Wallace
the Wattles. Science, huh?
I love The Science of Getting Rich.
Yeah, Wallace D.
Right?
Wattles. And
yeah.
He wrote just about what you said. And he called it being operating on the creative plane rather than the competitive plane.
Mm-hmm.
And really what that means is it's not that we're not aware of competition out there, if there is. I mean, there are times, depending upon what a person does, you know, three or four people might be doing going for the same piece of business and so forth. And, you know, there's a time and place for everything. But what that means to me is that while you're aware of what else is out there, and, you know, you can, and it's good to know, to have the information, really you don't focus on that. You focus on what you're doing. You focus on creating value for your customer or potential customer. And when your focus is on that, that's when things are going to happen.
That's exactly right. My attitude is that my value proposition is always very different from somebody else's.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I may be a great fit with you, maybe not such a great fit with somebody else. I just don't worry about it. I take excellent care of my client base, and I grow my client base, and anybody who wants to learn from me, ask me. I'll teach you.
Well, exactly. And that's, you know, that's why you're so successful at what you do. That's the kind of spirit you have. And it's very practical. It's not, you know, that's not, you know, la-la, just, you know, no. It's very focused and very practical. The way you're going to succeed is by differentiating yourself, finding your, my friend Mike Littman calls this your asset of value, finding out what makes you different, what sets you apart, what allows you to add value to that person. You know, in today's blog post, I wrote an article calling this one of the immutable laws of economics, and that is that people will exchange their money for that which they feel is of greater or equal value to the money they're exchanging it for. So in other words, if you can focus on providing them such great value, or what, again, Wallace D. Wattles called use value, compared to the cash value that they're spending, that's when they're going to do business with you. And that's when they're going to love doing business with you, because the money they're exchanging is not nearly as worth as much as the value they're receiving from you. And that's a key.
And so many people come to me, and I'm sure they come to you and say, well, you know, I need to make this much money. And I always cringe a little bit, because to me that's the wrong approach. I mean, you're looking at it completely backwards.
Yeah, you know, and really, you know, first of all, we understand where they're coming from is, you know,
sure.
that they,
they've
you
got
know,
a budget.
They, yeah, you know, and money is very necessary. And I'm not going to say it's a necessary evil because money is not an evil. Money's a great thing to have. You can do a lot of great things
like
with
money.
It when you have it. But it's
I like
simply
money.
Energy.
I'm not going to argue.
Huh?
I like money. I earn it.
Yeah,
it's simply
a commodity. Zig Ziglar, right. One of my favorites of all time, once said, "Money may not be everything, but it ranks right up there with oxygen."
Mm-hmm.
So, but the key is this: while we might, you know, when we live in a little bit of lack, we might be focusing on the money. What we want to do is focus on the value. See, money is an echo of value. I think this is so important. Money is an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which simply means that the value comes first. The money is the natural result of the value you've provided. And the key is where your focus is. Again, it's not that making money is a bad thing. Money is a great thing. It's just not a good thing to aim for. What you aim for is providing value to the other person. And if you look at it this way, and let's say somebody says, "Well, Bob, that's fine in theory, but you know, what if I need to make money right away? Doesn't it take longer when you're focused on the other person, on value, not money?" No, it takes shorter time when you're focused
That's
on
right.
the value. Why? Well, let's take an example. Let's say you are presenting your services to a prospective customer or client. If this person understands that you are focusing on them and how you can provide value to them as they see that value as being, the chances are much better they're going to feel good about you. They're going to come to know you, like you, trust you. They're going to respect your opinion and have faith that you can do the job and provide them that value they desire. And the chances are they're going to then exchange their money for your services. If, Denise, on the other hand, they can tell that the person they're speaking with is looking at them more like a potential paycheck, you know, if they're substituting a dollar bill or a wad of dollar bills for the person's head, you know, they can tell the focus is more on the money than providing value, they're going to be much less likely to exchange their money with you. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does to me. That always has. That's always been my philosophy.
Sure.
And by extension, when you behave like that in your business, you pick up referrals like crazy. It's just a natural progression.
Yeah, when you focus on providing great value to someone, not only will you do business with them, but you have created a context where that person not only feels good about you, not only would they continue to do business with you, but they'll refer you to other people. Now, there's some people who will naturally refer you to others just because they love what you do and they want to spread the word about you. Those are what we call your personal walking ambassadors. We talk about that in the book, The Go-Giver. There's other people who, while they may just, you know, love you and love working with you and being your client, they may not be the type that thinks of providing referrals, so you may need to ask them. And, of course, I provide the exact wording to use to make you very, very comfortable. I can walk you through that if you'd like.
If you don't mind, I know a lot of our listeners would love that information.
Sure. And this is when you have that know, like, and trust relationship with someone. And one of the ways that you can feel comfortable, because sometimes there's a bit of discomfort in going from, you know, what you've provided, the value you've given, to then asking for referrals. So let's make it a little bit easier by using what I call the referral bridge. Now, in the regular physical world, a bridge is simply a structure which transports you from one safe piece of land to another. In the referral world, the referral bridge is also a mechanism. It's a medium that takes you from one safe piece of land, the know, like, and trust relationship, to being able to ask for referrals in a way that this person will feel comfortable with. So both you and your client, your potential referral source, will feel comfortable. So you could ask something like this: Dave or Mary, I'm in the process of expanding my referral business, and I find it's helpful to partner with my clients and friends such as you. Can we take a few quick minutes and run past the names of some other people I might also be able to help? So let's go through that one more time. Mary or Dave, I'm in the process of expanding my referral business, and I find it's helpful to partner with my clients and friends such as you. Can we take a few quick minutes and run past the names of some other people I might be able to help? Now, if we were to take this phrase and really break it down, we'd see exactly why it works so well. First, you're saying, Mary, I'm in the process of expanding my referral business. Now, again, this is someone who knows, likes, and trusts you, so it's fine. You're just simply in a way that has posture, in a way that has class, in a way that, you know, shows that it's just normal for you. You're just letting this person know that you're in the process of expanding your referral business. A lot of people don't know. It's just not something they think of. So you're letting this person know what you're going to be asking. I'm in the process of expanding my referral business, and I find it's helpful to partner with my clients and friends such as you. When you use the word partner, you're kind of giving this person ownership. You're giving them buy-in into what you're doing. So to partner with my clients and friends such as you. Now, this next part of the phrase is very key. Can we take a few quick minutes and run past the names? We're using what I call fast language. You're not saying it fast, but the words you're using are effectively communicating that you're not going to take up a lot of this person's time. Can we take a few quick minutes and run past the names of some people I might be able, who I also might be able to help? Now, why do I say might be able to help and not definitely be able to help? Because when we say might, we put this person's mind at ease, that we're never going to be so overzealous that, you know, we're going to in any way come across inappropriately by trying to, you know, sell someone on a service they don't necessarily want. In other words, we want this referral source to know they're never going to be made to look bad by referring us.
Right.
So in a sense, it's sort of giving that person an out or back door. Now, so let's say this person now feels comfortable with giving you, you know, with talking to you about referrals. Now what happens a lot of times is the way we ask actually is counterproductive. We might say something like, so do you know anyone who might use, who you know, might need my services? Do you know someone who, you know, might need to have a virtual assistant? Do you know some? And what happens is the person will think about it for a moment, but they'll often say, well, I can't really think of anybody right now. But
right.
When I do, I'll let you know. And, of course, they don't really let you know usually
because that moment doesn't come.
Right, and it's forgotten.
Yeah.
It's out of sight, out of
right.
mind. Even though they like you, it's not their agenda. It's not what's on their mind. So what we want to do and what we've done when we say, do you know anybody who or who do you know, we've given them much too large a sphere. Most people know at least 250 other people. So when we say, do you know anybody who or who do you know who, a big collage of nameless, faceless people go by, and they can't really think of anybody. So what we want to do is we want to take the advice of the great Tom Hopkins, who wrote the classic How to Master the Art of Selling, and he suggests that we help funnel down people's worlds into small groups of people they can easily see in their mind's eye. And then we can always work outwards from there. So let's say, you know, that we, let's say one of your clients is Gary, and you know that, you know, Gary golfs. And you might say, you know, do you golf with different people? Do you golf with the same people? And he says, oh, no, I golf with the same people every time, every Sunday. Harry Brown, Michael Cloud, Dr. Mary Ruart, the four of us, we've been golfing buddies for years. Well, now he's given you the names of three people, so you might then qualify to see if any of them would be good prospects. We know he's a member of another organization, and so whatever. What you do is you find, you know, several different spheres where you can give him choices where there's only going to be a few people, between one and five people in each of those spheres, because then he can easily come up with names. Now, once he starts to come up with names, it gets easier and easier for him, because now the pressure's kind of off. And it's easier for him to think of other people and associate certain people with other people he's just mentioned.
And that makes brilliant sense. It really does. One thing, and this is a little bit different, that I'd like to ask you about is, and I run into this, believe it or not, I do have, my business actually is 100% referral-based, has been for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll get this comment from clients every once in a while, and it's just kind of an offhand client. I mean, just kind of an offhand remark, because I'm not actually looking for referrals. I'll take them, you know, if they show up and if they're a good fit. But I've had several clients recently, well, this year at least, say, Denise, I could keep you so busy. I could refer so many people to you, but I'm afraid you'll get too busy to do my work. I guess that's a good problem to have, but how do you respond to something like that?
Oh, yeah, that one, that's a great one, because what you can say is, you know, that's a terrific question, and I certainly don't blame you for being concerned. Actually, just the opposite is true. Because I don't have to go out and spend time prospecting for new business, I take on only the amount of clients that I'm comfortable taking on so that I can do great work for everyone. So that's something that, while I certainly appreciate the concern, it actually helps the situation more than anything else.
That is brilliant, because, I mean, I'm constantly expanding my team because we're growing all the time. And when that question pops up, I admit I just kind of go,
well, here's the neat
okay,
thing
what do
about
I say?
It. Well, in here, excuse me, here's the neat thing about it, that once you hear a question, an objection, if you will, one time, after that, you can formulate a game plan, so you never have to get taken, you know, at a loss.
Flustered.
Flustered.
Like, flustered
anymore.
I would love
so
to have
that,
more clients, you know.
Yeah, so what I always like to do when I answer a question is, first, I like to always, you know, congratulate them on a question and let them know it's a great question, and you know, I so appreciate that question being asked. You know, and indeed, I'm fortunate enough to receive, you know, to really have a referral-based business. And then you just go into...
And it's an implied compliment. There's no
absolutely.
I mean, it's an excellent compliment, but if my clients are saying, God, I'm not giving up my resource. She's too good to share. It's like, come on, share.
Yeah, well, and that's where you've got to show them that actually their concern is actually the reason why they should be doing it. And that's when you can say, you know, and I so appreciate the compliment. While I can understand your concern, actually, and you say this with a smile in your voice, and that's what's important. It's, you know, the way we say it is so important. You say it with a smile. But actually, the very opposite is true, because I don't have to spend time and resources going out to prospect for new business. It allows me to be able to devote more time to my clients such as you and those referrals I choose to take on.
Excellent. Thank you. I really, really appreciate that. That's one thing I've struggled with a bit. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, I always go, ah, ow, because I hadn't formulated an answer to it. You know, I just say, well, let me think about that. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, and one thing I would suggest to anyone who's listening to this is that, you know, if you have questions that people ask you that kind of trip you up sometimes, think of those questions in advance. Don't wait until you're asked that question and try to ad lib. Think of those questions. Maybe, you know, you can do a thing sometime where you all share a whole bunch of those questions that you know, the most frequently asked objections, if you will, and just kind of share the answers. And then what you do, see, the easy part is the answer, because once you have the answer, you always know the answer. The key is being able to communicate that answer in a way that, A, shows that you're not defensive, B, doesn't make the other person defensive, and simply shows your gratitude and appreciation for their asking, while at the same time you're then able to provide the answer and communicate it in such a way that they can receive it.
Right. That is absolutely brilliant. You know, we got away from the book.
That's okay. Hey, you know, sometimes these conversations just have a life, take on a life of their own. And
they do.
And that's okay.
They do. Well, I've got, like I told you at the top of the show, I've got a ton of questions for you. I wasn't kidding. So, and that, a lot of what we're talking about leads us back to the book in a very interesting way, because, you know, the title of the book is It's Not About You, and I can just hear people going, well, who's it about then? So first of all, I need to know, how did you come up with that title?
Well, my co-author, John David Mann, who really is the brilliant writer of the team, we've worked together now on three books, The Go-Giver, Go-Givers Sell More, and this one, It's Not About You. And I really owe him a lot of praise, because the Go-Giver and It's Not About You are both business parables. They're fables, so they're actually fictional stories that tie in various principles of success. And we also work with a wonderful, wonderful publishing house. So this was one of those where we all sort of put our heads together and tried to come up. We had a working title that was something totally different. And it was good, but it wasn't great. And then I think someone on the publishing team actually came up with this title, and we thought, wow, this is fantastic. So because really it puts across, first of all, the whole point of the book, but also the real point of success and influence, you know, because we're saying it, you know, if it's not about you, well, you know, who is it about? And
right.
Really, Denise, it's about everyone whose life you choose to add value to, everyone whose lives you choose to touch. And this could be anyone from, you know, friends, family, it could be people on your team, it could be the people who you want to, who you're clients and customers, it could be anyone. What it simply means is that to the degree that you focus on providing value to others, to building others, that's really the degree that you're going to build yourself. And I think it's very important to qualify and say that when we say it's not about you, that we've got to say, you know, please don't interpret this or misinterpret this to mean that we're asking anybody to be a martyr or a doormat or self-sacrificial in any way. That's not what this is about. It's simply a great business principle. And the top producers, the top money earners, the top leaders, the top influencers, this is how they run their lives and this is how they conduct their businesses, by focusing on building others, by providing exceptional value to other people.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's not only just, you know, people who you may be buying something from or purchasing a service. It's your team, it's your family, it's everybody. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's a life issue, isn't it?
Yes, well, absolutely. You know, everything in these books are sort of meant to provide principles that go across the board. So, and typically, if something works, if something's a universal law or principle of success that works in one area of life, it works in others. So, you know, when we talk about success, I mean, there's financial success, but there's also success in terms of physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, social, relational, and by and large, the principles that work in one also work across the board.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and I get this question a lot, and you have to as well, given, you know, the books that you've written and the speeches that you gave, the keynotes. A lot of people will say to me in one way or another, but I don't understand. If you're giving away so much stuff, if you're giving away so much information, let me approach it a little bit different. They'll come to me and say, okay, I've got all this great stuff. I want to sell every bit of it. But what are you giving? Well, nothing. I need to sell it. At that point, I start talking. Nope, that's not going to work. You know, you have to. We go back to the know, like, and trust factor in social media. People have to know who you are. They have to have a very good sense of your character, your judgment, your value proposition, if you will. They're not going to buy something from you just because you stick your hand up in the air and say, "I've got this great product. Come buy it." Ain't happening, hun. To put it in vernacular of the Deep South, just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more and more people are understanding that they have to be approachable. They have to give away an awful lot of stuff to sell something. But when they do sell something, the value of what was purchased is so tremendous that, you know, everybody got something out of it. And I think that people are slowly coming to that realization. You can't just sell something. Not anymore.
Well, the neat thing is that what you give away and the value you provide first doesn't have to be something that costs you money.
Right.
You can provide value in terms of some information. You can provide value in terms of connecting good people with other good people. You can provide information in terms of resources. Now, when people are on the competitive plane, or maybe in a lack frame, then what they think is that there's a limited pie. You know, in other words, well, if I give something away, that's something now that I don't have to make money from. When really it's just the opposite. And again, you and I both know, but I just want to say this for everyone listening. Please don't think we're talking about, you know, just esoteric woo-woo stuff that doesn't apply in the real world. No, this is very practical. Yeah, and, you know, when you give away information, when you help someone else, when you share resources, what you're doing is you are building that know, like, trust. You're building these personal walking ambassadors. You're communicating the asset of value you have, and you make yourself more desirable in the marketplace. So, but you know, we don't want to mistake giving away. You know, we call it in the book the go giver. People who didn't read the book mistakenly thought, oh, well, what they're saying is you should be just, you know, doing things for free or not making a profit. Yeah. Absolutely not.
Profit
that had
is
nothing
good.
To do with what we were saying. You know, and it broke my heart that people, you know, and as you know, Denise, people make major decisions based on very limited information. So without reading the book, they really had no idea what we were saying. We were never saying about giving yourself, you know, giving things for free or not making a profit or this or that. It had nothing to do with that. And neither does this. So no, you can give away all sorts of information, all sorts of wisdom, all sorts of value, and you know what? You're not going to run out of it. I mean, if you were going to run out of it because you gave that part away, you don't know enough to be able to stay in business anyway.
Excellent.
You have lots of wisdom, lots of knowledge to share. And the same thing that you know, a question that you answer for someone that then says to that person, wow, she really knows her stuff, that's going to make them more excited about doing business with you. It's not like they're going to say, oh, okay, I got that from her. I don't need her anymore. No, just the opposite,
right.
Actually.
That's exactly true. And one thing that you talk about in the book, I think you've talked about this in all of your books at some level or another, is influence, which leads into, you know, what we were just talking about. Influence is so, so important, and it's not something that you have to force, I don't believe.
Right. Well, just the opposite. You can't force influence because that becomes force. And mm-hmm. Force is not power. Yeah, force is the opposite of power.
Right.
You know, force is control. Force is intimidation. It's manipulation. It's compliance. That's not pure influence. On a very basic level, Denise, influence is simply the ability to move a person or persons to a desired action. But what that really does is brings us to ask, as Aunt Elle, the hero in the story, in It's Not About You, she asked to her protege, Ben, you know, she said, you know, think about it, Ben, what is influence really? And when I say what is influence, I mean, what is it made of? What's the substance of influence? And, you know, Denise, we believe that the substance of influence is pull. It's gentle pull. Pull being the opposite, of course, of push, which is why you don't hear people say, wow, she is so influential. She has a lot of push. No, it's that she has a lot of pull. You know?
Right.
And again, this is, and you know, it's so important because this pull, and I'm going to backtrack to something I just mentioned, but I think it's so important. This pull is a type of real, genuine power. And again, I want to make the point that power is the opposite of force. So we're not talking about control, manipulation, intimidation, compliance. That's a function of positional leadership, if you will, rather than true influence-based leadership. And let's face it, you know, even positional leaders can still cause their employee, or their team members, or their organization, or what have you, to take action. But again, that's compliance. And the troubling part of that is that when people act out of compliance, they, you know, they might do what you tell them to do. I mean, they know they have to, but at best they're going to do exactly what you told them to do and not one bit more.
Nothing more. That's right.
And at worst,
I've seen that time and time again.
I've
done it myself.
Exactly.
I mean, we're all guilty of that. It's like, look, you can't tell me what to do. I'm going to do it, but you can't tell me what to do.
Exactly.
Look, I argue with my nav system in my car because I hate being told what to do. I don't care if that car is telling me to take a right. I'll think about it. You know? I think it's just human nature.
Exactly. And so really what it comes down to, I think, and this really is really what influence is all about, there's a big difference between compliance and when there's buy-in. And this buy-in is based on that influencer understanding how those they're wanting to influence will benefit. And see, you know, when there's, see, when that's the case, there's commitment. And my friend Dondi Scumaci, and I don't know if you know Dondi, talk about someone who'd be wonderful to interview someday. She is a huge, she speaks to, you know, the corporate 100, the Fortune 100s all over the world on leadership and influence. She's an amazing human being, and I love what she says about this. I think this is brilliant. She says, compliance will never take you where commitment can go.
Brilliant.
Mm.
And so simple.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And that it's so true. If you're committed to something, you really want to see it through. You want to see it through and go further. You want to take more steps and do it. If you're in compliance, all you've done is a task, basically.
Right, exactly.
Okay, I'm going to take care of this, knock it off of my to-do list, and I have no emotional commitment to it at all.
I agree. I mean, I think you hit the nail right on the head, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we all have our tasks that we have to do, but my business coach gave me some brilliant information the other day that I knew, but, you know, you don't know what you know all the time until somebody says, hey, you know, points it out to you. But I was complaining a little bit about one of my, and I can't call them employees, they're everybody that works with me is a contractor, 1099 contractor. But this girl, and I love her to death, but all of a sudden her work just plummeted, and she went from being just a brilliant part of my team to just being compliant. And I knew it wasn't her. I knew it was me. I just couldn't figure out what in the world I was doing wrong. Turns out, once I sat down and discussed it with my business coach and with my team member, I simply was not giving her a big enough picture of what her part was. She was just plugging away, doing her little bit, but she didn't have the whole picture or a big enough part of the picture to really understand how important the work that she was doing was and to make suggestions about, you know, maybe something else that can be done to streamline it or a bit of added value. I was really keeping her in the dark, not intentionally. You know, I was just busy. I would shoot her over instructions, do this, do that, do this, and not tell her why she was doing it. And as it turns out, she got a little pissy, quietly, and just never confronted me. She didn't want to rock the boat, but she let me know in her way that I wasn't really being a very good boss. It was an eye-opener for me.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think we've all, you know, done that because, again, we just kind of focused on our needs and what
that's right.
we... Yeah, and I mean, hey, you know what? None of us are perfect.
I really took her for granted. Yeah, and I.
But that's why having a business coach is great, and you had the wisdom to to get counsel from her, and because sometimes we just can't see. We're so close to a situation, Denise, we can't necessarily see it.
Oh, that's right. And my business coach, God love her, tells me which way the corn grows.
Sure. Well,
he is not worried about hurting my feelings, and that's
a good thing.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, it's, but I would love for you to introduce me to your friend. I think that would be brilliant. So, Bob, your book, I mean, I'm fascinated with the reviews that I'm reading. That's one of the reasons I ordered it. But I know we're talking about influence, but we're also talking about the law from your previous book. I know that you say this story is just really an expansion of law number 3 from your previous book, The Go-Giver.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, law number 3 of The Go-Giver is the law of influence, which says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. And again, when we say that, it's so important that we, you know, want to make sure people know that this is a business strategy. It's a life strategy. It's not a matter of putting other people's interests first at your expense. You know, it doesn't mean that you're putting yourself down and being codependent. It doesn't mean you're being a martyr. It doesn't mean, you know what I'm saying? It's simply that successful people, this is how they live. This is what they do. They understand what I call the law of the golden rule of business, of business networking, of sales, whatever you want to say. And we have one of the characters tell Joe this in the book. Joe is the protege in the first story. And it simply says, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. So we're talking about really very practical principles and laws here. There is no faster, There's no more powerful, there's no more effective way to elicit those know, like, and trust feelings toward you from others than by temporarily suspending your self-interest, if you will, mm-hmm. and focusing on providing value to them.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah.
I mean, when you go to a party, just kind of put it in very, very simple terms, when you go to a party, if you're the guy that's buttonholing somebody, you've got him by the sleeve or the collar, and you're just talking about you.
Mm-hmm. How attractive is that? You know, do people really like that person? Oh man, you know, you got to meet this person. They can talk about themselves like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. But if you stand there very quietly and very attentively, and you listen with your whole body, and your whole mind, you've learned something.
Mm-hmm.
And you've attracted somebody at some level.
Hmm.
So I find that works in business as well.
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. You know, I often say to my audiences, or I'll ask them a question, say, have you ever been in a conversation with someone who let you do practically all the talking? And, you know, some heads will nod, and I'll say, didn't you kind of come away from that conversation saying to yourself, wow, what a fascinating conversationalist that person was?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've all had that experience where we've seen that. You know, it's that person who makes us feel so good about ourselves because they simply asked questions and they listened. They really listened.
Right. And they're not going back with, yeah, well, I did such and such. It's,
right, exactly.
I have to go now. I need a breath of fresh air. So, but yeah, it is. And, you know, those principles translate across life, across business. Yeah, I don't know if it's a character issue. Is this something that people can develop if they know they need to develop? Or are you just born with that innate capability?
No. It's something we can all work on. Yeah, it's funny, too, because that you bring that up, and it's a great point, because I remember I was at my local Dunkin' Donuts a while back, and I'm a Dunkin' Donuts fanatic, so.
I've never been to one.
Oh, my gosh. Well, where are you? Are you up in?
I'm in Louisiana. I'm
thinking
Katrina
in Louisiana. Do they not have? No, they don't probably have Dunkin' there, do they?
They may. I just don't like sweet things.
Oh, okay.
I'm one of those rare people that doesn't like chocolate. I don't like sugar.
Well,
I don't like
that stuff. You're very lucky.
I don't eat that stuff.
But I only do the donuts on Sundays because my personal trainer gives me that one free day to eat donuts. I can have coffee the other days, and I love Dunkin' Donuts coffee. But I was standing in line, and there was a young kid with his mom, and this kid was talking a mile a minute, and one of the people near me was saying to someone else, well, that kid will make a great salesperson one day. And the implication was, and this is such a false premise, but the implication was that because this kid could talk and talk and talk and talk, he's going to be a natural born salesman, right? And we know that kind of person makes the worst salesperson.
They'll talk you out of it eventually. You'll get so bored and so frustrated that you just say, go away.
Oh, absolutely. Plus, they're just not focused on you. They're focused on themselves and often focused on their product or service. And so people say, well, you know, the people have said to me before, I could never be in sales. I don't have that gift of gab. And I will say, do you think people with the gift of gab make the greatest salespeople? And they'll say, oh, of course. And I'll say, well, let me ask you this question. When someone when you're a prospect for a product or service and somebody is in the selling process and they just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, do you like dealing with that person? Do you buy from those people? Oh, absolutely not. I never buy from those kind of people. Well, then what makes you think that that's what would make you the most effective salesperson? Oh, yeah. So, you know, I always say that people with the gift of gab can be great salespeople if they're willing to lose that gift.
Listening and listen.
Exactly. So those people can learn to be a good salespeople because they can learn to be a good listener. But it's the people who tend to be very shy, even introverted, they make the best salespeople on a natural level because to them, they want the other person to be the focus. And in sales, we've got to remember, it isn't about you and it isn't about your product.
I know.
It's about the other person.
Listen, for many years, I had several people say, Denise, you're a natural born salesperson, and I would rather be hit by a beer truck than be termed a salesperson. And then it finally dawned on me that maybe they were right. But, I mean, I'm not chattering. I'm not, you know, grabbing you and going, you have to buy my stuff. I'm really listening. I want to know what it is that you need, and can we provide it? Great. If we can't, I'll tell you so.
Well, but, that's what makes a great salesperson.
Really? Listen, I turn away business. I will turn away business because they either can't afford my rates or they're just not ready or, you know, they can't afford my rates.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, I'll find a way. No, no, no. If you have to struggle to pay me right now, no. Why don't we do this? We'll set some things in motion for you. I'm going to give you some steps that you could and should take. And in a few months, let's revisit this and see where you are financially. I will not take their money if they cannot afford me. And, you know, the minute I make that decision, for those of you who are listening, people say, oh, how can you turn away clients? The next day, practically, and I am not making this up, somebody shows up who absolutely can't afford me and who knows what they need and want.
So, and the interesting thing,
it's a garden process, you know.
Yeah, and again, let me make sure that people don't think, oh, well, that's that, you know, the karma thing. I mean, karma is a great thing, but it's not something to depend
on.
No, it's nothing
to do with karma. I just don't want to take their money if they can't really.
Right, but there's a reason that person showed up the next day, and that's because the reputation you have gained by only taking on the clients who were suitable for you.
Right.
Has spread, so your influence has spread. Now, it's not that this person who you just turned away said to somebody and it was that person. No, it's that you've been doing this for years and that you've developed such a great reputation by being so ethical, by being so fair, by being so honorable that people talk about you. And so, you know, it just, so these are the things that show up. We often call it the law of left field because, it seems like it's coming out of nowhere, but it's not. It's really coming out of everywhere.
You know, I had not heard of that before. Do you mind expanding on that a little bit?
Well, the law of left field simply says that the greatest gifts will come to you at moments and from places you least expect. How does that work? Well, when living our lives and conducting business according to the five laws that we talk about in The Go-Giver, which is the law of value, the law of compensation, the law of influence, the law of authenticity, and the law of receptivity, when living our lives and conducting our business according to these laws, all sorts of value really showers down upon us from that unnoticed, that unseen place. Examples might be, you find a critical lead, you receive a great referral, you make a crucial last minute connection that turns into a very lucrative new client. A golden opportunity just seems to drop suddenly into your lap, or some incalculably valuable thing just comes your way, but not from the people or places you might have expected, or maybe even hoped for. So again, you might have even said to yourself, wow, you know, that one came out of left field.
I have said that.
Well, when living with a giving spirit, which simply means being focused on providing value to others, great value comes our way, but in amounts far greater than what anyone, owes you. But here's the key, and I think this is so important to understand. Again, there's absolutely nothing mystical. There's nothing magical about this. We can't know where these gifts will come from only because we can't know exactly where our influence has spread, but spread it has. You've planted so many seeds of goodwill, great will. You know, so many people know you, like you, trust you, want to see you succeed, want to be part of your life, that the world has become what we call a benevolent context for your success. And while you can't necessarily see its operation, there is indeed cause and effect. The cause is giving value. The result is receiving. That's really all it is.
And, you know, Bob, one of the things that I've had the most problem with in my life, and I'm sure you've heard this from a lot of people, is from receiving. It's, people will pay a compliment or they'll want to give me a gift, and I instantly kind of poker up.
Mm-hmm.
What is that all about?
Well, you know, it's very interesting about that, because of all five laws in the book, The Go-Giver, we've heard from more people who say, you know, that that was the toughest one. John David Mann got a great email once from someone. It was just so funny. The person said, John, you know, the first four laws were like polished wood. The fifth law gave me splinters. And I think what it is, in a sense, is that society looks at receiving, it looks at money in an unhealthy way. And many mm-hmm. people have unhealthy relationships with money on an unconscious level. And one reason is because of all the messages that we get about money. Now, this could be a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, television news, television shows, movies, where we get just endless, countless messages and sub-messages of lack. You know, you go to a movie and there's always, you know, there's always two types of people. One are the good people who are always poor but happy. But they're always being put down, put off, stepped on, taken advantage of by who? The rich people who are always mean mm-hmm. and nasty and cowardly and have no soul.
It's a Wonderful Life. I mean, yeah, look at that.
Oh, perfect example. You've got the good guy, Jimmy Stewart's character, George Bailey, who was just, first of all, he was self-sacrificial, right? Remember, he was going to travel the world and build skyscrapers, mm-hmm. but instead he stayed home and foregone his own dreams to take care of the other poor but happy people.
And he was wretched. He was absolutely wretched.
Right. And then you had...
So what gift is that to his loved ones? I'd like
exactly.
to know.
Well, then remember, who was the evil Mr. Potter, who was
right.
the rich capitalist who just wanted to destroy everybody in his wake and didn't just want to be rich, he wanted to make everybody even poorer. He was mean and nasty. I mean, that movie, and I love that movie, by the way. It's a wonderful
I do
story.
Too.
But the
every
subtext...
Once in a while, I look at it and go, hang on a second.
Right.
You know, I argue with the movie, I have to be honest.
Right. Well, no, it's because of this. It's the subtext. The subtext mm-hmm. is that age-old question that people have been asked since they were born, and that is, would you rather be wealthy or happy? What
well,
a horrible, horrible question that is.
I know.
Because
it's not even a true question.
It's not a true question. It's based on a false premise. This false premise is what John and I call the treacherous dichotomy or the false dilemma. And a false dilemma can be defined, Denise, as the inappropriate or unnecessary use of the word or. There's no reason for or. It's not wealthy or happy. It's wealthy and happy. And so,
there you go.
Yeah. And so my friend Randy Gage, who writes on prosperity, he'd be another great guy to have as a guest. He does a hysterical vignette about the movie Titanic and the lack programming in Titanic. And I won't try to steal his story. It's his story. But basically, to sum it up, he talks about how pretty much all the poor people are happy, happy-go-lucky. They're free. They have no worries. You know,
yeah, they're dancing below stairs.
Right, they're dancing below stairs because poor people know how to have a good time. But the wealthy people up in first class are miserable, nasty people. There's the abusive guy, Cal, and there's the mother who's going to let her daughter marry this horrible person because they need the money, and that's what rich people do. Rich people will sell their daughters for the money, and then Cal is going to sacrifice the life of a little baby so that he can get, because rich people, right, you know, all the, now here's the funny thing, and here's what Randy says, and tell me if this isn't almost hysterical when you think of it. James Cameron, the producer and director, he ended up working that movie for a percentage of the gross. James Cameron made something like $600 million teaching all of us that it's righteous to be poor and bad to be rich.
Oh, I had not even thought of that.
Oh, nobody has. I mean, it was so brilliant that Randy had done that. And I, and, you know, my thing is, I go, look, you look at the Beverly Hillbillies, and you might say, well, wait a second, though. Jed was a millionaire, and he was very nice. Yes, but let's look at how Jed made his millions. It was not through the conscious adding of value to the marketplace. It was through luck. And in Hollywood, it's okay to be wealthy if it was by luck.
If you win the lottery.
Yeah. It was by, and remember the Beverly Hillbillies, the whole premise, and I love that show, but remember the whole premise was they were always trying to find ways to remain like the poor folk and be regular people, not like those bad, phony, wealthy people in Beverly Hills. So there's all these sub-messages and sub-con. Now, here's the thing. It's not that Hollywood or anybody does this because they, you know, I don't think there's any conspiracy of trying to keep people poor or trying to keep people in lack. No, it's just what sells. It's what people really buy in. Now, here's the thing. What does this have to do with our law of receptivity? If you are learning and living these messages from the time practically when you're born to everyone you meet, every TV show you watch, every movie you see, every book, you know what I'm saying? And you're getting this message again and again and again and again, and you don't even realize it. What is that? You don't even know that you're having this horrible relationship with money. So you can be providing great value to the world, and now it's time to receive, and you've earned the right to receive, not the entitlement, but the right to receive, and now, unconsciously, you're fighting it.
True, and I see that happen. Now, I have not done that because I earn every penny I've got, and I'm very proud of every penny that I've earned. But listen, I mean, I will have, for a while I drove a Mercedes, and now I don't. I have a Range Rover, and I'm proud of that. I mean, I worked hard to earn both of those vehicles.
Sure.
And I came out of a grocery store last year sometime when people, I guess there was this big thing going on about, you know, SUVs are bad. No, they're not. They're great. If you want one and you can afford it,
absolutely.
Buy it. But this woman came out, and I had seen her go through the line with her food stamps, and she was wearing very expensive jeans and a lot of jewelry, and I wasn't. But I went to get, you know, load my groceries in my car, and darned if she didn't stop in the parking lot and start to harangue me about my car. Mm. We had a conversation, and it wasn't pleasant. I won't repeat the conversation.
Don't they say something down south where you are, something like, bless her heart?
Well, I didn't even go that far. I just said, bring it on. Bless her heart, my butt. I mean, I looked at her and I thought, I'm paying for your groceries.
Yeah,
I probably am paying for your housing. And you think you're going to talk to me about a car that I fought to earn?
Mm-hmm.
Let's have a chat. And we did. And it didn't end well. She cried. But it was either that or we were going to, you know, sometimes you have to stand up for the money that you make.
Oh, well, absolutely.
It's mine.
I mean, if you, on my blog at berg.com, I have a blog, and I have about a 15-part article on called Capitalism versus Socialism. Check your premises.
I've been reading it. Yeah, I've been reading that.
And you know, I don't insult anybody. I don't say anybody doesn't believe this is bad or anything like that. No, I think I make the case as to how a true free enterprise system, and when I say true free enterprise, true capitalism, that is not to be confused with the corporatism that goes on, where big companies actually buy special rules, laws, and regulations from government. That's not capitalism or free enterprise. Unfortunately, many people think that is, which is why they say they don't like capitalism. But true capitalism, where it's the free exchange of products, services between people, government's legitimate function is simply to protect people from force or fraud. That's how we build a society that is beneficial for everyone, even the poor, especially the poor in a truly free society, are much better off than the poor in a third world country.
No kidding.
But there's more abundance for all in a free enterprise-based economy. And I try to make that point in the blogs in a way that's not offensive to anyone and that allows discussion.
And like I said, I've been reading those, and they're brilliant, and I suggest that anybody go there. Bob, we're about out of time, and I would love for you to come back because I have so many more questions. We really didn't even get into the book. as much as I would like to. And if you would be willing to come back, you know, sometime in the new year, I would love to have you back as a guest.
I would love that. I would love that.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, tell people where they can find you on the web, where they can find your blog and your books.
Yeah, just come visit us at www.burg.com, and while you're there, you can sign up for all the ongoing value-based information, including you can download chapters of my books, the chapters 1 and 2 of It's Not About You, and then, you know, go to my, if you'd like, connect with me on social media and go to my blog post and just kind of have fun, hang around, become part of the family.
Great. Well, I love that you were here today, and you gave so much great information. I really, really appreciate it, and I know our listeners do as well, and I will be in touch with you to get you back on the show soon. Thank you, everybody, for being here with us today. The show will be available for download in about 15, 20 minutes. And this is Denise Griffiths and the fabulous Bob Burg wishing you a wonderful weekend, and I will see you next week. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. What a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. Bye-bye.